It's reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 12, The Killing of the Demon Agasura, text number 25. Okay, I'm not going to read the word for word because there's no purport. So we're going to read a number of verses. 10th canto is pastimes, relishing the pastimes. So there's a few purports here and there. Translation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, was situated as Antaryami, the Supersoul, in the core of everyone's heart, heard the boys talking among themselves about the artificial python. Unknown to them, it was actually Agasura, a demon who had appeared as a python. Krishna, knowing this, wanted to forbid his associates to enter the demon's mouth. Text 26. In the meantime, while Krishna was considering how to stop them, all the coward boys entered the mouth of the demon. The demon, however, did not swallow them, for he was thinking of his own relatives who had been killed by Krishna and was just waiting for Krishna to enter his mouth. Krishna saw that all the coward boys, who did not know anyone but him as their lord, had now gone out of his hand and were helpless, having entered like straws into the fire of the abdomen of Agasura, who was death personified. It was intolerable for Krishna to be separated from his friends, the cowherd boys. Therefore, as if seeing that this had been arranged by his internal potency, Krishna was immediately struck with wonder and unsure of what to do. What's that? Was momentarily struck with wonder and unsure of what to do. Now, what was to be done? How could both the killing of this demon and the saving of the devotees be performed simultaneously? Krishna, being unlimitedly potent, decided to wait for an intelligent means by which he could simultaneously save the boys and kill the demon. Then he entered the mouth of Agasura. Purport. Krishna is known as Ananta Virya Samvargya, Sarvagya, because everything is known to him. Because he knows everything perfectly well, it was not difficult for him to find a means by which he could save the boys, at the same time kill the demon. Thus he also decided to enter the demon's mouth. When Krishna entered the mouth of the Agasura, the demigods hidden behind the clouds exclaimed, "You were there." It's bringing back old memories. But the friends of Agasura, like Kansa and others, demons, were jubilant. When the invincible Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna heard the demigods crying from behind the clouds, he immediately enlarged himself within the demon's throat. Just to save himself from the coward boys, his own associates from the demon who wished to smash them. Purport. Such are the acts of Krishna, Paritranaya Sarunam Vinashaya Chajuskritam, 4.8, Bhagavad Gita. By enlarging himself within the throat of the demon, Krishna suffocated and killed him at the same time, saved himself and his associates from imminent death, and also saved the demigods from lamentation. Then, because Krishna had increased the size of his body, the demon extended his own body to a very large size. Nonetheless, his breathing stopped, he suffocated, and his eyes rolled here and there and popped out. Must have been quite a sight, seeing someone's eyes pop out. The demon's life air, however, could not pass through any outlet, and therefore it finally burst out through a hole in the top of the demon's head. It'd be nice to have a video camera. When all the demon's life air had passed through that hole in the top of his head, Krishna glanced over the dead calves and the coward boys and brought them back to life. Then Mukunda, who can give one liberation, came out of the demon's mouth with his friends and the calves. A few ups and downs being a calf or a coward boy in Krishna's pastimes. They get killed a lot. they also died when they Kali, a serpent, from the poisonous vapor. Krishna had to bring them back to life then also. From the body of the gigantic python, a glaring effulgence came out, illuminating all directions, and stayed individually in the sky until Krishna came out from the corpse's mouth. Then as all the demigods looked on, the effulgence entered into Krishna's body. Purport, apparently the serpent named Agasura, because of having received association with Krishna, attained mukti by entering Krishna's body. Entering the body of Krishna is called Sayuja Mukti. But later verses prove that Agasura, like Dantavakra and others, received Swarupya Mukti. This has been broadly described by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur with references from the Vaishnav Toshini of Srila Jiva Goswami. Agasura obtained Swarupya Mukti, being promoted to the Vaikuntha planets to live with the same four-handed Bali features as Vishnu. The explanation of how this is so may be summarized as follows. The effulgence came out from the python's body and became purified, attaining spiritual shuddha sattva, freedom from material contamination, because Krishna had stayed within the serpent's body even after the serpent's death. One may doubt that such a demon, full of mischievous activities, could obtain the liberation of Swarupya or Sayuja, and one may be astonished about this. But Krishna is so kind that in order to drive away such doubts, he had the effulgence, the individual life of the python, wait for some time in its individuality in the presence of all the demigods. Krishna is the full effulgence, and every living being is part and parcel of that effulgence. As proved here, the effulgence and every living being is individual. For some time, the effulgence remained outside the demon's body individually and did not mix with the whole effulgence, the Brahma Jyoti. The Brahman effulgence is not visible to material eyes, but to prove that every living being is individual, Krishna had this individual effulgence stay outside the demon's body for some time, for everyone to see. Then Krishna proved that anyone killed by him attains liberation, whether Sayuja, Swarupya, Samipya, or whatever. But the liberation of those who are on the transcendental platform of love and affection is Vimukti, special liberation. Thus the serpent first entered the body of Krishna personally and mixed with the Brahman effulgence. This merging is called Sayuja Mukti. But from later verses we find that Agasura attained Swarupya Mukti. Text 38 explains that Agasura attained a body exactly like that of Vishnu, and the verse after that also clearly states that he obtained a completely spiritual body like that of Narayan. Therefore, in two or three places, the Bhagavatam has confirmed that Agasura obtained Swarupya Mukti. One may argue, how is it he mixed with the Brahman effulgence? The answer is that as Jayan Vijay, after three births, attains Swarupya Mukti, association with the Lord, Agasura receives a similar liberation. Mam Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristai Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shinivadi Paskatya De Sitarane. Nice being back in Dallas again. Nice. Radha Kala Chandri, still here? It's fixed. Here it mentions that, well, is one of the indications that Krishna is daksha. He can do many things simultaneously. In one sense, Krishna, he comes here in order to enjoy his pastimes. Whatever Krishna does is for his transcendental pleasure. It's not that he comes here and he thinks, oh, it's the same old pastimes. I got to do it again for these conditioned souls. I wish I could get out of it somehow. I'm doing this since time immemorial, and it's the same result all the time. I always win, the demon always loses. It's all been fixed. It's like one of these wrestling matches which is decided beforehand. Who's going to win? So apparently, if we were in such a situation, every time we came, you know, this demon, that demon, we know each time it happens, I'm going to kill them, they lose. But even though it apparently like that, but Krishna has Yogamaya acts in a very special way to make Krishna's pastimes even interesting to Krishna. That although we all know who's going to win, but still there's some excitement there. Krishna is put into a situation where even he feels some excitement, some anticipation. He even has to think sometimes. Not that it's all been worked out. You know, Yogamaya is going to kill him. So maybe this time I'll just take a nap and Yogamaya is going to kill him anyhow. Why bother even entering into his mouth? No, apparently even Krishna has to think sometimes about what to do. Although he knows, because this is Nitya Lila. This is not the first time he's killed Agasura. He's been doing this since time immemorial. Even we can find that Narada Muni, when he came down to see Krishna right before, I think Krishna was about to go to Mathura. So Narada Muni describes all the different pastimes that Krishna is going to have, everything he's going to see. So, whether he goes to Mathura or whether he marries 16,108 princesses, this has all been previously arranged and it's been going on since time immemorial. But it's Nitya Lila, it's Nitya Nama Nava Yavana, which means it's always fresh, even for Krishna. When Mother Yashoda is trying to bind him or chasing after him, it's not that Krishna thinks, well, I got to run away or else the pastime is spoiled. I could turn around and just trip the old lady up, but... No, Krishna, for him, it's when he's crying and tears are coming from his eyes, he's actually feeling afraid. Of course, not the same way we'd feel afraid. But there is some transcendental mellow in being afraid of being chastised by Mother Yashoda, and Krishna's enjoying it. So he's actually thinking he's being bound. When Krishna kills the demons in these pastimes, it is actually not Krishna killing the demon, but it's the Vishnu expansion killing the demon. Not that Krishna's thinking, well, you know, sometimes I dance with the gopis and sometimes I just annihilate people. It's according to my mood. If Radharani's not nice to me today, who knows where my mood will be at? It's so changeable. No, Krishna is always in the same mood, but within himself, when he comes, that all the different incarnations join with him, and when it's time for an incarnation to display its particular potency, then it does so, even if Krishna is not entirely aware of what's going on. When Krishna killed the Putana demon, or at least Vishnu killed the Putana demon, then Krishna was playing on her breast as if nothing had ever really happened. He wasn't, little baby Krishna wasn't thinking, little did she know. Anyone else want to tackle me? No, he was still an innocent little child. And that proportion of him which had actually killed the demon, Putana, simply went back into his, withdrew himself. That doesn't mean Krishna is schizophrenic. It means that Krishna can simultaneously perform many different activities and compartmentalize his consciousness so he can enjoy each one of them simultaneously and not get disturbed by them. So how he does it, well, we do that also. We can do that to a certain extent. Just like we can act like very nice Vaishnavis and Vaishnavas here, externally and inside, who knows what's going on inside our mind? So So Krishna can do that also. He can display a certain mood and activity externally, but he may have a completely different mood internally. So his original mood, of course, is that of Krishna. So from our point of view, when we look at Krishna's pastimes, killing the demons, we think, well, that wasn't very nice of him. His schizophrenic nature just pops out and people come, whether it be his nurse or whether it be calves or snakes or bulls or whatever, horses, and he just, this nature he has just pops out. He kills the thing. And he just goes back to another nature again. Don't get too near him because you never know what's going to happen. No, actually, it's a whole different mood because whatever Krishna does is good. For Krishna even to act as his Vishnu form and kill Agasura, it's not that he has any animosity towards Agasura. But he knows that Agasura is actually not a python. The actual personality is the soul within. And somehow or another, by some arrangement, he was chosen to take part in Krishna's pastimes by his previous, obviously pious activities. He was an ordinary demon, you know, some punk off the street, just have to walk into Krishna's pastime. No, nothing happens by accident. Like, for instance, Bali's sister in one incarnation, or his daughter in another incarnation, depending upon which incarnation, because these pastimes go on in many universes at many different times. But when Vamanadeva walked into the arena, she was overwhelmed with maternal affection, and therefore she wanted to breastfeed him. And later on, when Vamanadeva took all of Bali Maharaj's property, she became very envious and wanted to kill him. So Krishna arranged it that she got the opportunity to both breastfeed him and try to kill him at the same time. But when she tried to kill him, she became purified, and her original mood of maternal affection manifests itself so that she became one of Krishna's mothers in the spiritual world. So similarly with the Agasura demon, obviously there must have been some pastime where he was devotionally qualified and at the same time had committed some offense that needed to be purified before his full devotional qualifications could manifest himself and he could be awarded with Swarupya Mukti. So we don't know the whole history. It's not that they just appear out of nowhere or that anyone can just get into Krishna's pastimes. No, these are very special personalities. And it's all arranged partially because it's Krishna's pastimes. It's for our, ultimately it's for our benefit. Krishna doesn't have to come here to the material world and display his pastimes. Not that, you know, the spiritual world is getting boring and he needs a challenge. So. He comes here looking for a challenge because no one here listens to him, so see what he could do here. No, he has no problem in the spiritual world. They're all exciting and they're all novel pastimes going on. And even if they're the same pastimes, they're always fresh. It says in Brihad Bhagavatamrita that Krishna periodically goes away from Mathura and periodically goes to Mathura from Vrindavan, kills Kamsa, and then comes back again after some undetermined amount of so-called time, which doesn't exist in the spiritual world. But this goes on again and again. Krishna's pastimes, even there, are occurring again and again. But when they happen, no one thinks, oh, this pastime again is, you know, we've been doing this eternally. Doesn't he ever quit?
He doesn't kill the demons in the spiritual world, right?
No, he supposedly kills Kamsa. There's rumors of demons, obviously. But in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it says appears at some time, at some moment, and then takes Krishna away. And some pastime is enacted in Mathura. And then after some time, all the residents are feeling great anxiety and separation. And then after some time, Krishna comes back again. and their separation dies down. They forget he was ever separated, and then Akura appears again. So somehow or another, Krishna has chosen, or eternally, there are the best possible pastimes that can exist. And then maybe there's some variations on them, but more or less the theme is the same. After all, even in this material world, you know, the whole theme is the hero and the heroine. The hero gets separated from the heroine, and all the hero has to go through so many trials, and the heroine has to go through so many trials, and then they get united again, and they live happily ever after. So whatever, and then there's always some demon, you know. All there's nothing really new. Even all these comic books, there's always some person with superpowers. You know, he's Krishna. He has some mystic powers. Or, and there's always the hero and the heroine, and there's always some demon, and there's always et cetera, et cetera. Of course, nowadays, because we're approaching the mode of ignorance, now the demons are the heroes. Something, because people who are watching the film, they have to identify with someone, and if the person's too good, they couldn't identify with them. So they have to choose, you know, have to have some hero who's more partially has maybe a good quality. He steals money and gives it to his grandmother or something. That's his good quality. But you know, if he's too good, no one could identify him with him. Thinks unrealistic, impractical. In any case, there's always some quality. Even the demons are given mystic powers in Krishna's pastimes. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any challenge. You know, if everyone was, you know, some mafiosa and Krishna comes, you know, wouldn't be much of a challenge for Krishna in his pastimes. So even the demons have to be given some qualification. Some qualified personalities have to become demons, otherwise there wouldn't be any challenge. And even if there is no challenge, ultimately there wouldn't be any excitement to the pastime. No one would want to listen to it. No one would want to hear it. But Krishna has his pastimes so that it develops some interest. The problem is that without going through the first 9 cantos of the 10th of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we just take it as some storybook. We don't realize how exciting it really is. It's some python. Just like imagine you go to downtown Dallas and you see this python sitting in near a mall and its lips are touching the clouds. I mean, you'd be impressed. At least you take a photo. See, everyone out there with a photo, with their camera, their iPod photograph. But it would be quite impressive. Or, so these demons are quite impressive. You know, a whirlwind demon can pick up little baby Krishna and bring him 800,000 miles into the air. I mean, you'd have to. Interesting pastimes. I mean, actually, all of Srimad Bhagavatam is interesting. But here you have this helpless little child, and all these demons are always attacking him, so it's interesting. And then he has his affairs with all the gopis, and he goes to all these city in the middle of the ocean, and it's interesting to hear about it. Even if we think it's mythological, it's interesting, and it's even more interesting if it's not mythological, that we could actually go and join Krishna in some leela, either in Vrindavan, where there's all kinds of nice food, nice air and water and sounds and smells that everyone's enjoying there. That even the tigers and the deer, they're, you know, living happily together. So it's interesting if we actually had some faith that we could actually go there, we might even do something to go there. Make a little effort. But in any case, it's an interesting story. And here we find out that if it is true that even these demons, they get benefited. It's not, no one gets left out. It's not that only the cowherd boys or we listening to it, and these demons get, you know, thrown into the garbage pile after it's all over. That Krishna's pastimes are totally good, and everyone is ultimately benefited by them. absolutely benefited by it. And therefore it makes it even more attractive and interesting to hear about it, because there's nothing else like that. In the material world we find either you lose or I lose, or we both lose. But hardly there's any win-win. As I said before, there's the give-and-take policy. You give to me and I take from you. There's nothing really more than that going on in the material world. Either you lose or I lose. Or everyone loses. Because ultimately that's the material world. It's a, no one wins and no one breaks even. This is the place where no one gets out of alive. But Krishna's pastimes, everyone is benefited. Therefore, it's exactly the opposite of what goes on here. And therefore, it's more attractive to, even if there is, was no Krishna, even if there was no, still, what we're doing is ultimately the best thing. Even from the point of view, at least we have some hope. Otherwise, what hope does anyone have? To struggle against all kinds of people trying to exploit you, and everyone's trying to exploit us, and the people who are having these advertisements on television, the radio, on the streets, trying to exploit us, trying to sell us things that we don't really need, brainwashing us into thinking we have to work hard to get them. And then when we get them, they break down, and they try to sell us another one. Trying to sell us, you know, all kinds of false conceptions and ideas just to exploit us. Or a place where people are actually interested in benefiting others up to the point of view that even someone comes to kill you, you give them absolute liberation. So who do you want? As Pundarik Vidyaniti was saying, that who better to worship than Krishna? That even the Putana demon came to kill him and he gave her the position of his mother. So who could be more merciful? Who do we want to worship? The President of the United States or Krishna? Who's more worthy of our attention and our service? So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Yes. He didn't say he went straight. He said eventually he attained Vaikuntha. Eventually. I mean, sometimes there has to be some steps to purification. But he said ultimately he arrived there. Just like Dhritarashtra, he only obtained mukti. But it would be understood that after some time he may have made some progress.
How does it compare to sometimes there's devotees to people who favorably execute oodles and boodles of devotional service, and they don't seem to get either liberation.
Well, the question is whether
straight to Vaikuntha or any of that.
Well, the question is whether it's really devotional service they're executing. They may be doing some service, but what their mood is, why they're doing that service, has to be examined. Whether it's really purely out of devotion, or they have some other motivation. Everyone's engaged in some kind of service to Krishna, either directly or indirectly. But it's rare you find someone who's actually completely surrendered to Krishna and doing it only to please Krishna. So everyone gets the result. It may not be what we externally think would be the result, because we're not really very conscious of what, we're not necessarily conscious of what the internal motivations are. Yes.
This is kind of embarrassing. Did you say, was Putana Bali's daughter or something?
Yes.
That's from my daughters. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. It's good to be part of a Vaishnava family.
It switches off. Sometimes it's his daughter. Sometimes it's...
Well, it mentions in the Vaishnava Acharyas say that she may have been the daughter, she may have been the sister, but we can understand that this pastime goes on in many universes in many different times. So sometimes she may be the daughter, sometimes she may be the sister. But nothing happens accidentally. It's all some divine arrangement. Nothing unfairly happens. There's always a very clear justification for whatever Krishna does. Otherwise, Krishna just liberate everyone. If, you know, some person who's purely a demon since time immemorial only wanted to kill Krishna, and then she pops in and just becomes a mother, then what about us? We're not that bad. We may be bad, but we're not that bad. So there must be some very internal, a not very obvious reason why these things are happening. And sometimes our acharyas point that out. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande Haribol.